Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When family is all that matters, make sure they're protected. Visit Zurich.ie to learn more about life and serious illness cover.
Eileen, thank you very much for that. Now, the National Immunisation Advisory Committee is expected to provide new guidance this week on whether 12 to 15-year-olds should receive a COVID-19 vaccine. Separately, it's expected that the vaccine portal will open next week for those aged 16 and 17. Well, I'm joined now by Dr. Niamh Lynch, consultant paediatrician at the Bonsecours Hospital in Cork, and also by Professor Sam McConkey, Head of Department of International Health and Tropical Medicine at the Royal College of Surgeons. And thank you both for joining us this afternoon. Niamh, I'll start with yourself. And as it currently stands, vaccines are actually approved for the over 16s already. And it looks now like the 16 to 17 year old group will be the next group that'll have a portal open for them. They'll be in line for vaccination, which I imagine is a very welcome development.
Yeah, I think it is. It's a good news story, Sarah. You know, this is a group of children who have had huge disruption to their life in the past year and a half with regards to the school environment and their ability to interact with each other, with their friends, with their family and things like that. And they are the group of school children that are more likely to, you know, socialise. That's part of their sort of normal development, is that they want to mingle and interact with each other. So, you know, it's a choice that they have now that they didn't have before. Obviously, when it comes to vaccination, it is a decision that the child and the parent will make together. But we're in a great position of privilege that we're able to offer the vaccine to this age group when you consider the global position of vaccination. And, you know, in poorer countries where the vulnerable and even healthcare workers aren't being vaccinated, we're very lucky to be in this position.
Yeah, and I know there's a whole separate debate as to whether or not we should be going down that route, given what you've just pointed out. We might get to that in just a second. But I think it's probably not that awfully controversial, the idea of vaccinating 16, 17-year-olds. But as you go lower, the more controversial it appears to get, certainly the 12 to 15-year-old age group, for example. I know that NIAC is looking at the international evidence for whether to vaccinate that age group. And I wonder what you think of it, Niamh. Would you support that?
Well, to be fair to NIAC, they have actually been examining this for weeks now, as far as I can gather. So they're obviously giving it very careful consideration and thought. They will be looking at the data from international trials. They will be looking at the data from you know, the States and Canada, where vaccination for this age group has already been rolled out. And of course, the European Medicines Agency has given their blessing to it as well. So, but undoubtedly, you know, for parents weighing this up, you know, if you look at the risk to a child if they get COVID, the risk of them becoming seriously ill is quite low, but the disruption to their lives is quite high. And, you know, parents are going to want to weigh up any sort of perceived risk that there might be from a vaccination versus the risk of contracting COVID-19. And that is why NIAC is very wisely giving this very careful consideration.
What do you think of it, Sam? Because I know in the UK, health authorities have decided not to offer the vaccine to those over 12. They're just giving them to teenagers who have underlying health conditions or maybe people who are living with a vulnerable sibling or family member.
Thanks for having me. It may be two different vaccines are given, and here we're looking at probably Pfizer, Moderna and mRNA vaccine that we're proposing to give to the 12 to 18-year-olds, who has in the UK. I think a lot of their vaccine supply has been AstraZeneca, which may not be as effective and may have a slightly worse risk profile in younger people. So I think the issue here would be whether in Ireland we would give the messenger RNA BioNTech product. And I think that I take great delight in the fact that in Ireland we very robust institutions. NIAC is a non-statutory group that's a subcommittee of the Royal College of Physicians of Ireland, which I'm, of course, a fellow of. And it's about 360 years in position in Ireland, that RCPI. And it's a group of 15 experts who, as Niamh has just correctly said, have been weighing this up for a couple of weeks. So I'm delighted that we have got folk who are willing to give, largely voluntarily, of their time and energies in sort of national service to try and formulate advice to the government, which of course the government then have to act on. So I will follow what NIAC's recommendation is and kind of trust the process. Sometimes having a robust process of reviewing something at national level and make a decision is more important than the individual, whether, you know, Sam McConkey thinks this or that.
Sure.
I actually think that the process that we're following of having this expert committee is great.
Sure, but I think a lot of parents are starting to engage with this debate now, even though we're only still in July. It's a couple of weeks only till we get back to school, and obviously that debate has already started as to whether the schools will reopen. All indications from government are that yes, of course they will, but I think the immunisation and vaccination status of children is likely to come into that debate. Niamh mentioned the very low risk, or perceived risk indeed, of vaccination versus the very low risk of children getting seriously ill. I don't know what you know about that, Sam, or what you can tell us about it.
I've been really stunned in the last few weeks how few people over 65 and even over 85 are getting any form of COVID. So it's been dramatic in our country that the vaccine campaign has worked dramatically well, much quicker than I expected and much more effective than I expected. So these vaccines really work dramatically. I'd like to encourage all the children's parents that the parents also need to get vaccinated. There's still quite a number of people, you know, over 18 who have not yet got the vaccine. I encourage all your listeners in those groups to please register and follow what's the great work that's happened in the older people over 85. And I personally think it probably is a good idea for people 12 to 18 to get the vaccine, and that will prevent you know, some of the fatigue and tiredness and things, and onward transmission as well. So there's not only benefit to those individuals, but if they're coming in contact with other people around them who aren't vaccinated, they might be putting them at risk. So it helps us to control the virus at national level well too. So there is if we can get up, you know, more than sort of 90 or 95% of people vaccinated or naturally infected and then immune through natural infection, then that also leads to almost a suppression of wild transmission of SARS-CoV-2 in our country and in our island. So I think there's public health benefits to everyone vaccinated, but also individual benefit.
I might come back to yourself on that, Niamh, because, you know, I think it's different for a lot of people when they think about themselves versus when they think about their children, in terms of, like, they might be very happy to get a vaccination for themselves and maybe a little less quick to move towards getting a vaccine for their children, especially given how much extra thought and research seems to be being put into it at the moment. You know, it's not a given that it'll happen. What do you think about the age group, the 12 to 15 year old age group, and returning to school, and whether they should be vaccinated before that?
Well, I think we have to be realistic in terms of vaccinating that age group. If NIAC does make a decision that this age group should be vaccinated, then there is no chance that they will all be fully vaccinated before schools return. That is assuming that NIAC gives the go-ahead. Regardless of whether they give the go-ahead or not, our focus really should be laser-like on schools returning safely. We're in a wave of infection that is significantly more contagious than the previous strain, and, you know, we're sending children back into classrooms, and so mitigation is extremely important, because if you have an outbreak in a classroom, then yes, the children may remain quite well and may stay out of hospital. They may become unwell and may need hospitalisation, but unfortunately the whole classroom's education will be disrupted, because if there is an outbreak, then, you know, those children will have to be sent home to self-isolate. So it's very important that we get the classroom environment correct, regardless of any decisions that are made on vaccination, because I think all of us as paediatricians have seen significant mental health issues as a result of this significant disruption to children's lives that has been ongoing for the last 18 months.
And I don't know, do you have any thoughts, Niamh, on what sort of mitigation measures might be needed? Obviously, there were an awful lot put in place already. Do you think we need more than what was already in place? And if so, what?
Well, look, I will defer to Sam, obviously, being the expert in terms of the infectious diseases element of it. But, you know, we do know that this is an airborne virus, and we have evidence from other countries that air filtration as well as ventilation is very important. You know, we live in a country that's pretty cold in the winter time, and, you know, the way that classrooms were ventilated in the last school year was largely through opening of windows. And I have seen children suffer significant consequences of just being really, really cold. So I think it's important that we look at all the options in terms of cleaning the air, as well as, you know, cleaning students' hands and cleaning surfaces and things like that.
I put that question to you, Sam, as we head back into the school year in a couple of weeks' time. Is there anything extra we need to be doing, do you think, other than what's already in place?
My view is that many schools have done a really good job on this. They've had separate entrances for each class going into the room, separate toilets for each class, separate wash hand basins for each class, and separate break times. So if there is an outbreak in one class, that it doesn't affect other classes. They've also, you know, spaced out their physical apparatus and, well, as Niamh said, done some ventilation, which may not be perfect, but it's been better than nothing. So I think by and large the schools have done a great job, and most of the children, when they've been at school, have been delighted and happy with that and adapted to the sort of fact that they have to play with their own pod of people in their classroom rather than playing with people in different classes. So I think the school by and large has done a great job up now, and I think largely doing the same thing again will hopefully keep most of the children okay.
Okay, can I ask you then, Sam, about the issue of vaccinating children or even talking about vaccinating people under 18 when there are many other countries around the world where very vulnerable older adults, healthcare workers, others who are vulnerable in community have not got a vaccine? Do you think there's an argument for giving our vaccines away once we've got to the over 18 population done?
Yes, and maybe even that argument has been around even for the people in their 20s, 30s, 40s. UNICEF are campaigning to raise money that get a vaccine for free, so give money to allow UNICEF to buy a vaccine for use in other countries, and I think that's a really good UN-UNICEF campaign. For healthcare workers, I'm obviously a healthcare worker and advocate that people who are putting themselves at risk, like the kind of firemen in the 9/11 disaster in New York, putting potentially their own lives at risk, and you know, we've had several graduates of RCSI who've sadly died of COVID, they should be vaccinated. And similarly, the elderly and vulnerable, those with chronic diseases and those with older age all over the world, this is a worldwide problem. I hope in Ireland, you know, we can help with our public policy to help the pharmaceutical industry to make vaccines both for our 18-year-olds and for developing countries. We have a very big and successful vaccine export industry here based in Grange Castle. Pfizer makes the biggest selling vaccine in the world in the past was Prevnar, and a lot of it's made in Clondalk and exported. So we obviously manufacture, you know, atorvastatin, Lipitor and Viagra and lots of other things. So we have this great industry here. So I think we should be trying to mobilise as much as we can to help make and export vaccines.
And what do you think of it, Niamh? Because, of course, the flip side of that argument is, you know, the children then, particularly those, if we even just take the over 12s, if they don't get a vaccine, will be quite possibly restricted in different things that they can do. And I know you've mentioned how you've seen a lot of mental health problems among children. So what do you think?
You know, it's a very strong ethical conversation that needs to be had. I don't think that it's an either-or position, because, you know, we don't have to physically give our vaccines away. We just need to facilitate production of enough vaccine for the poorer and developing countries. And, you know, there are various ways that that can be done in terms of, you know, as Sam says, ramping up production for export, and also considering the whole issue around intellectual property. That's a huge discussion that needs to be had in a very open way. You know, this is a global pandemic. We are a small country in a very global context. And like I said, it's an absolute privilege to have the discussion even around children getting vaccination, but we have to be aware that there are countries all over the world that are far more severely affected than we are and far less vaccinated.
Just finally then, Niamh, you mentioned, you know, some of the negative ramifications of COVID-19 on children that you've seen. How are children doing in your view generally?
Well, I think they're having a great summer. The weather has definitely helped, you know, and all the outdoor summer things that they've been able to do. So the children that I'm seeing at the moment are absolutely in flying form, you know. Now, a few of them have voiced concerns to me that they might not be able to go back to school. And I do see that the Department of Education is putting in fantastic work in terms of making schools safe, as they did last year. But in general, you know, if you look at the data in Ireland, you know, there was a very good study published in the Irish Medical Journal reporting on mental health impact on children. And what struck me the most was the presentation of mental health issues to the emergency department December 2019 compared to December 2020. It was up 150%, you know, so that those are very stark figures, and we really have to mind our children's minds. This has been an incredibly tough time for them. So, you know, it's very, very important that we support them in their return to school and getting back to normality.
All right. Thank you both very much for joining us this evening. That's Dr. Niamh Lynch and Professor Sam McConkie.